Morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Thursday. It's August 19th, 45 degrees here in Old Town Park City. On the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Cesar Cornejo. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. We continue to see shower activity today still hanging around for us. Again, that low pressure system exiting out of the area. We'll see a high of 55 and a low of 53 as the storm chances start to slowly wane out for us. Friday, we're going to see a much better day, sunny, and a lot warmer compared to today, where we're going to see a high of 65, and as we go into Friday night, a low of 48. Saturday, that's where we see another round of some thunderstorms and some showers because of a quick clipping system. We'll see a high of 71 and a low of 51 on Saturday night. Sunday, we'll see a mostly sunny sky, but hanging around with some slight shower possibilities with a high of 72. Sunday night, we clear out. We'll be seeing a much drier trend with a low of 50. Monday, we're expecting to see sunny and clear conditions, 75 as our high, 53 as our low. And then Tuesday, same thing. Once again, we'll see temperatures at 70, 77 is as our high and 53 as our low. And heading into Wednesday, it'll be quite a warm one out there, sunny, clear conditions with a high of 80. But let's talk about the smoke. We continue to see all of that smoke still hanging around. Why is that? Isn't the rain supposed to help wash it out? Well, unfortunately, because of the low pressure system having that counterclockwise flow and the cold front helping move some of that smoke, it's almost as if it's recycling itself. So it's just hanging around and just kind of wrapping around and moving back in. We aren't seeing the heaviest of plumes anymore, but because the smoke has just kind of almost concentrated towards the surface, we're expecting to see that poor air quality still continues. Luckily, we do see a little bit of a shift in our winds once that low pressure system continues to move out. We should stay a little bit clear with better air quality as we head into the weekend, but as westerly flows continue and that new Caldera fire ends up continuing to grow over in Northern California, we may see a return of smoke once again. So we should just prepare to see smoky skies in our forecast going on forward.
Oh, okay. Hey, thank you. And stay tuned. Coming up in just a minute, we'll be checking in with Summit County Councilmember Melina Stevens. Later on, I'll be talking with the co-founders of RAD. That's the Responsible Resort Area Development Coalition, Nancy Lazenby and Deb Renfro, with an update from last night's Park City Planning Commission meeting discussing the PEG project for the redevelopment of the Park City Mountain Resort parking lots. Finally, Park City Executive Director, or Park City Film Executive Director, Katie Wang, with an update about what they've got going on as well. The Summit County Council met yesterday and on the phone with a recap, Councilmember Melina Stevens. Good morning, Melina.
Good morning, Leslie.
So the council approved of resolutions for a $50 million open space bond. Why did you think that that $50 million price tag is appropriate?
So the way that we understand it is because the process is a relatively quick turnaround to try to get something on the ballot for November, that we approve the resolution and we can bond up to $50 million. So the public will be choosing in November whether or not they want us to have access to that $50 million for open space projects, including trails and other improvements. And depending on if we get other funding sources, we may not need to bond for that entire price. It's a relatively low price tag, less than $100 per year for residents. And so we felt that with what the community was telling us about wanting to direct growth to specific areas and to preserve specific areas, that we needed to be more aggressive in that plan. And with the way real estate and land is going right now, it's likely that a large price tag will be necessary in order to fulfill that commission by the community.
Public hearing is set for this on the east side of the county for September 22nd. What about a meeting on the west side?
So the meeting on the 22nd that we're having on the east side of the county was intentionally over there, as this is the first bond in a very, very long time that will impact the east side of the county. And so we wanted to make sure that they were aware and had easy access to that meeting. It will also be on Zoom, so anyone throughout the county can easily attend and speak at that public hearing via Zoom, and would encourage everyone to do so that we can have that public input. Additionally, it's likely that we'll have subsequent public hearings on the west side of the county at the Richens Building as well. Those have not been calendared at this point.
So would you change your mind based on public input about putting it on the ballot?
So with that, it could be a quick turnaround. It's likely it will be on the ballot. We could remove it. It would still show on the ballot, but we would not be taking that bond at that point. It's likely to appear on the ballot, and voters would have the option to be able to choose. And I think that's part of why this process is so interesting and exciting, because the public gets to speak regarding their opinions on it, as well as what types of land and different things that different projects that they would like to see done. And they get to make the ultimate choice in November with casting their votes to ensure that we're making the decision that they would like as far as directing growth within this county.
Well, the Park City Board of Education also announcing yesterday that they intend to put a $79 million general obligation bond on November's ballot. Is this a good thing to have both of those bonds on the same ballot? I mean, are we making a choice between education and open space?
When you get down to the numbers, it's a relatively small amount based off the property tax value of people's homes. So between the two of those, we're likely looking at less than $200 per house, depending on value, with some of the condos and townhomes likely being less within this area or on different parts of the county, depending on the value of property. It's something that the public will have to determine. I think it's important that we support the education of our children, especially as we've seen over the last year how dynamic our education system and our teachers have to be in order to adequately and do an excellent job teaching our children. So I don't think those necessarily need to be in conflict. Members of the public may see that differently, but these are the values within our community. We value our children. We value the open space that we have, and the only way to preserve that into the future is to make sure that we are purchasing easements for those properties so that they cannot be developed.
What's the latest date that the council definitely has to say yes or no to the ballot language?
So the ballot language is a pretty quick turnaround. County Clerk Eve First, I believe, said it was we had to have something, the language finalized, I believe, mid-September. So the final, in order to get to the printer within the time frame. So with that, the language will be finalized relatively quickly, and then we'll go through the rest of the process as far as with the public hearings and messaging with the public, ensuring that we're listening to everyone regarding their thoughts on this bond. And they'll be able to vote for it in November.
All right. Well, it sounds like, I mean, as being discussed, I mean, everything but the kitchen sink is going to be eligible. I mean, are you going to be a little bit more specific about what it can and can't be used for?
At this point, there are not specific projects that we're looking seriously at. We want to make sure that when we have those opportunities, that we have money in hand that we can take advantage of. When we look at our current real estate market, things are going very, very quickly, and we want to make sure that we can act when we have that. Bonding for specific pieces of open space, sometimes owners are not willing to wait for us to complete a process in order to get the required funding to make those purchases. And so we want to make sure that as we move into the future that we have that money in hand and can act quickly when there are projects that are compelling for the community.
Yeah, and I guess I was asking, I mean, it just seemed like we're going to allow capital projects, facilities, and more than just property to be the money spent on.
So with that language, the intention is that we can make some improvements to some of that land that would be benefit to the community, including trails, trailhead parking, some of those types of improvements, including improvements that can support our wildlife, which was some comments that we received from the public, some some input and that we thought would be valuable and that we've heard throughout different applications over several years, the concern that the community has for wildlife as we're making improvements such as trails or ski runs or different other improvements to open space for community access, that we're honoring the environment and honoring the other creatures that live in those areas as we do so. So it's inclusive and broad intentionally, so that we have the ability to use that money to make these open space areas as accessible as we can while still balancing that with the natural environment.
Let's get your reaction to the Parley's Canyon fire. Do you agree with other council members who say that we need a really deep debriefing about what just happened?
I absolutely agree. My family was impacted by the fire and we were evacuated, and it was a very sobering experience, one that I think the county and all of the county partners, which is incredible how many amazing partners that we had to fight this fire. It was incredible, but we need to make sure that we're communicating or being more clear with how we're communicating with the public. I think that we did a pretty decent job, but we did receive some comments that there were members of the public impacted by the fire that were frustrated that they were not getting more frequent updates. My impression is that there was some concern with, you know, when your home may be impacted, you want very frequent updates. You know, you want to know every 10 minutes how your house is doing and making sure that we're giving regular updates and letting the community know that at 7 p.m. or 12 p.m. we are giving updates every single day so that people know when to tune in, how to tune in, and that those will be the most clear and consistent updates. So I think that something like that, as far as streamlining our communication, would be helpful. I think the county staff did an excellent job with posting things on social media, but ensuring also that we're utilizing our partners at KPCW and Park Record and other partners with nonprofits to ensure that all members of the community are getting the messages needed and that we are able to support those members of the community as we also are trying to save their homes actively with fire prevention and fire maintenance with the wildfire.
So as you kind of get into that debriefing, I'm guessing you're scheduling that for sometime down the road. Is that part of it then, how the communication plan works forward, going forward?
That was something that we did discuss last night, and I think that there was interest amongst the council and the staff at looking and seeing how was our communication effective? How was it not? How was our evacuation effective? How was it not? I think as Roger Armstrong stated last night in the meeting, Councilmember Armstrong, he stated that we don't really get these real life practice experiences very often, and that we need to take advantage of that by doing a large debrief to see where the real holes in our system and in our communication are, so that we can move forward and do a better job if and when something like this happens in this area or in other areas of the county, or if we need to assist in other jurisdictions.
During public comment, council heard from about 10 people about the Dakota Pacific project at Kimball Junction. They said that it seems like the council is on the verge of approving the project, but they said it's a mistake and just going to add more population, traffic, and pollution to the Snyderville Basin there. Speakers included former county commissioners Bob Richer and Sally Elliott, as well as Basin Recreation Director Bonnie Park. At some point, County Attorney Margaret Olson interrupted and said this was turning into a public hearing on a pending application without the applicants being present. Then Chairman Glenn Wright allowed a bit more testimony, but we couldn't hear the council conversation about this on Zoom. Can you explain what happened to us?
So there was some conversation regarding whether to continue or not. With that conversation, we always welcome public input, and Dakota Pacific's proposal, as you stated, is pending application. And Margaret Olson, the county attorney, did caution us during the public comment that the public hearing had been closed and that it could be construed as a public hearing. We're awaiting some further input and advice from County Attorney Margaret Olson to ensure that we are honoring the process for the community and the applicant. With the process, these projects are very large and very complicated, as I think everyone that has been listening to it over the last few years can attest to. And so we want to make sure that we are going through and honoring that process. And so we will be following up with that.
You suggested having another public hearing on Dakota. Will that happen?
We're looking into that. Nothing is calendared, so we will see where that lands.
All right. And are the Dakota developers willing to reserve some of the units here for people living and working here?
We are currently working through that. It has not yet been finalized.
Okay. The North Summit Recreation Project will create softball fields and multi-purpose fields in Colville. The council didn't vote on this, but there was, I believe, a consensus in favor of it. It would draw from two different funding sources. I think that you noted that RAP funding doesn't usually get distributed to North Summit very often. The other source, a restaurant tax, since the purpose of the tax is to generate visitation. Again, can it be used for ball fields in Colville?
The rationale behind that is we can use it for ball fields in Colville because it will be attracting, at that point, it will be attracting tournaments and different things, family events that would then allow those people to dine and stay in hotels within Colville that would boost the economy there. So that was the rationale behind that, and something I think is really critical in ensuring that we are doing what we can when there are really exciting projects on the east side that we're supporting those. Currently, it's about 4% of that tax that has been going towards the east side of the county with these recreational type projects. And this is a way that we can really infuse some of the funds that we have and making a big difference on the east side of the county. And so I'm very much in favor of distributing that in a way that allows our funding to be a little bit more equitable between the east side and the money that has been previously spent on the west side of the county and boosting some of those recreational spaces.
All right. Also looked at the code amendments about bed and breakfast inns. The council, after a lot of wordsmithing, approved a definition of owner. We're not going to make you go into the weeds on this, but the definition is one sentence that runs for eight lines. I guess as a former Snyderville Planning Commissioner, you sat through all of this. Can you work with that definition?
The definition is very specific and intentionally so. As we were reviewing it, we wanted to make sure that we were creating what we intended. And the intention that we are trying to set is I think what everyone or most the average person would view a bed and breakfast as somebody's home where they live that they have invited other people to come to. They give them breakfast, this cozy inn type experience, but not something that is owned by a corporation with employees, something that's more intimate. And the reason that that's important, I think, to the community is because when you have an owner-occupied residence as a bed and breakfast, that's the primary residence of the owner, there's going to be more interfacing between other members of the community and neighbors, and it's likely that they're to be more responsible because there's more impacts to their life personally if they're not. And so with that, we wanted to make sure that we were specific enough so that we would get to that intention if somebody wanted to do a bed and breakfast in the future. We had a long conversation about bed and breakfast and nightly rentals and the differences, and came to the conclusion that this product, that there may be a place for this product in our market within Park City, and that it could be something beneficial to specific areas depending on the project.
Yeah, so the whole problem started with the question, how can the bed and breakfast be owner occupied if the owner is a corporation? Do you think the amendment has answered that?
I believe so. We were very specific in the language regarding how the owner could hold the property, because some people, for liability reasons, will put their home in an LLC or a trust or another form. And we wanted to ensure we were not excluding those people. And so we were very specific that it had to be the primary residence of the owner or married couple, and that they had to live there, but they could hold that within a trust, LLC or other sole ownership type corporation.
Deputy County Attorney Dave Thomas suggested that maybe the way to settle the whole issue is not by allowing bed and breakfast as a use. So what's your take there?
As I stated, we had a pretty long conversation about that point and determined that there could be a place within our market where somebody would want to do a bed and breakfast that was more of the traditional bed and breakfast. Council Member Armstrong mentioned that there are still professional organizations that support bed and breakfast for people that are in that business, and that is still a business that is thriving amongst, you know, the nightly rental model, and that is something that we would be able to influence and impact more than we can with the nightly rentals, and that would be a benefit to the community if someone wanted to do a bed and breakfast versus just using their home as nightly rentals.
Okay, finally, just wanted to get your reaction to the debate last week with regard to wearing masks in schools. Do you think that the county can agree with the state for a process to implement a mask mandate?
So, I mean, the county council and county manager and health director are very committed to making sure that we take the necessary action within the confines of the law and are actively working on that. They're meeting currently, but later today with the state school board to further discuss. And the Summit County Attorney's Office is working closely with the state school board and the superintendent to make sure that we can come to an understanding regarding who holds that power and making sure that we are staying within the correct process.
Okay, I mean, how do you feel about it? I mean, is it something you would favor, at least for the younger kids?
I think it's important that we're protecting our children. I have a young child that is unvaccinated, and it does give me pause as he's going back to school, especially as we get into the colder fall and winter when kids are likely to be inside more versus outside as they've been in the summertime, at the spread and the potential sickness that will be out. I have a sister that is an ICU nurse and that is actively working with COVID patients, and the amount of children that are ending up in our ICUs across the nation is really, really horrible and very scary. I think we need to do what we can to protect children, but it needs to be within the confines of the law and within the correct process so that we can ensure that we're doing it in a way and that we're not compromising our ability to be able to take steps that are necessary.
Okay. Hey, Melina, I appreciate your time this morning. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's Summit County Council Member Melina Stevens. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. It's 8:30. Park City Planning Commission met for more than 4 hours last night, and the meeting actually running out of time before the commission could cover the proposed conditions of approval for the PEG development project. In the studio with me, I have two of the co-founders of RAD. That stands for Responsible Resort Area Development, Deb Renfro and Nancy Lazenby. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning, Leslie.
So let's see, yesterday's meeting, as I mentioned, lasting more than 4 hours, covering the transportation plans for PEG's base project and going over the findings of fact of the project. Still a very sharp divide between some planning commissioners on the issue of transportation. Planning Commissioner John Kenworthy bringing up repeatedly that he has yet to see a real plan from PEG, the city, or Summit County on how their visions for transit would integrate into one another. Has RAD had any discussions with other stakeholders about a solution that involves satellite parking, busing? Do you want to take that, Nancy?
Sure. Thank you, Leslie. We have reached out to several community members, the local officials, and we are trying to participate as much as possible. The plans that they're putting forward have been strictly from PEG, and the community input has been limited. But we have reached out as much as we can, and we continue to reach out everywhere we find opportunity. Deb, would you like to add to that?
Yes, one of our members actually is Clive Bush, who I believe you might be familiar with. He is a former traffic engineer, and he has actually been on a transportation committee with Summit County, I believe, and has, he and I have been talking a lot. He has been sending numerous emails and potential plans and identifying the potential issues and going through AECOM, who is the city's third-party consultant on it, and just really pointing out, nailing down some of the problems and then possible solutions. But unfortunately, it doesn't seem to be getting any traction.
Right, and then we've heard this from Commissioner Kenworthy before. I mean, we don't even know who has access or, you know, to and whether or not transportation will be provided from some of the park and rides. Of course, we've got the Richardson Flat area. We've got another one that's being planned. So is this transportation plan ready to move forward in your minds?
No, it is not in our minds. There's just way too much that needs to still be figured out. And unfortunately, the applicant hasn't put forth any sort of stats or real-time, like real-life data that pertains specifically to PCMR. I think if you heard John Kenworthy actually pointed out last night, you know, Deer Valley has come up, they've had their consultant put together where people are coming from, and they have specific percentages that say, this is how many people come in from on 224 from Salt Lake City. This is how many, this is the percentage of people that are coming from Jeremy Ranch, Kimball. The level of research that has been performed for that development seems to really outshine the amount of research that's been done for this development, and we're so far down the road, and the fact that none of this data has been collected to date is quite concerning.
Yeah, I had heard one suggestion that Park City go ahead and implement paid parking this winter as a way to kind of get some kind of gauge in terms of how many people are willing to cough up the 25, 30, 40, we don't even know how much, bucks, though, to park. And then how many would actually jump on a bus? I mean, has that been discussed at all?
We have heard the same rumors, and we agree with you. You bring up an excellent point, Leslie. The only thing that PEG has told the commissioners and the city and the community so far is that the parking won't be less than $20, but we don't know what they're going to charge. So that would incentivize, kind of as Commissioner Kenworthy has said, a stick for people to park out at one of these park and rides. But if we don't know where everyone's coming from, are they coming from Heber? Are they coming from Salt Lake? Where do we put these park and rides? Because clearly there's a shortcoming of spots, a shortage of spots. If you think of this whole city as a whole, right? We have the Park City development at the parking lot. We have Snow Park talking about developing. We have employees here in town that need to park somewhere. So as a whole, unfortunately, the commission is looking at each project individually, but as a whole, we need a lot of parking, and we don't know where to put those parking spots, as Kenworthy pointed out, because the research hasn't been done to know where the people are coming from.
Yeah, so Park City's got a transit first goal.
Exactly.
Yeah, so do you feel like that the parking needs can be balanced then?
Well, we certainly hope so. Our goal as RAD has always been to be responsible resort area developed. We're not no RAD. We, as the commissioners and as the community, we were excited to see a development coming to Park City Mountain, and we still are hopeful that something reasonable can be reached where everyone is happy, where there is parking, where there's not the transit issues, we're not adding to traffic by building this project. So we are very hopeful, yes, that a plan can be still put together that will be a successful project for the community, for all the stakeholders.
Certainly on-site parking has been another sticky topic, and RAD has repeatedly spoken up about the underground parking plans for the site. So do you have a solution for this?
Well, first of all, the parcel B, the amount of above grade parking is around 30%. So it's not all underground, which is a problem that RAD has been combating, because we believe that that probably also lends to the building heights being what they are. It's 87 foot tall building on parcel B. As far as the parking goes, you know, I just want to mention it's been reiterated, you know, it's 1200 for 1200 day skier spots. However, it's the day skier spots that they are taking from whenever they think that there's a problem. So with the shuttle drop off right now, they believe that it's going to be inadequate. Even AECOM believes it's going to be inadequate. There's a lot of concern from the commissioners that it's going to be inadequate. And they're saying, well, we'll use parcel B's garage. We'll dedicate spots for shuttle drop off. First of all, that garage is only supposed to have a clearance of 8'2", which isn't probably going to work for some of the shuttles that cater to the PCMR crowds. The other thing is, while the DA said another 600 day skier spots, we're actually not fighting them on that. But the residential and commercial, they're asking for a 502 parking exception. And that is a problem because, first of all, it's the LMC code. So I think before the code was written, surely some research was done and it was put together based on actual needs. And if the LMC is saying you need those spots, for us to grant basically a 50% reduction or more to what is required seems excessive.
LMC, we're referring to the land management
Correct.
Code there, yeah.
Can I just add to that? Deb is 100% right. The 500 spots they're asking for a reduction for is for employees. There's no parking going to be allocated for any of the affordable housing. There's no parking being allocated for any of the employee housing. So to think that nobody's going to have a car that wants to live at PCMR seems unrealistic.
These are for sale units, though, too.
They are for sale units with no...
Well, they get one spot. Each for sale unit gets one parking spot. Yes.
But no employee parking, no... for the employee housing, no employee housing parking. So, yeah, a lot of the people maybe won't. They'll be the J employees. But a lot of the employees will have a car, and they will not be able to park their car there.
Right, and the hotel is a 249-bed hotel, and while I would agree that not every single family that comes to that hotel or visitor who comes to that hotel is going to have a car, you have to provide appropriate parking for that. And they have said that they will rely on stack parking, which unfortunately also is not allowed under the land management code.
Planning commissioners also went over a draft findings of fact document for the project, providing some feedback to staff on what to change, bringing up issues related to building heights mm-hmm. and parking. Do you feel that the commission is on the right track here?
I do. I feel like they're trying to find the solution. They're working very hard to find a solution. The challenge they have with this particular project is a lot of the development rights, the density, was given to the parking lot to keep the ski mountain as open space. So unlike Deer Valley, where they can build a few houses on ski runs or a few townhouses, all of that density is not allowed at PCMR. Maybe 20 years ago they decided that.
Right.
So
it took
when,
it off for the montage, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So when Peg talks about the building heights and the open space, that they have reached 63% open space, they're actually including the ski runs.
Well, 11.2 acres on the face of the mountain is included in that open space total.
So first time, everything out at the base of the mountain is what they're considering open space. So if you really look at the parking lot, they have this immense density that they're trying to reach. So they're getting to these enormous buildings. As an example, I don't know if you've been to the canyons lately, but the Pendry is being built out at the canyons, and it's about 74 feet. And what they're proposing at Park City is significantly larger than that. They have four buildings, one being 71 feet, approximately the same size. The other three buildings are 84 feet, 87 feet, and 103 feet tall. So the 103-foot building is literally 30 feet taller than the Pendry, which is an enormous building. So all of that sort of stuffed into the parking lot is a challenge for the commissioners because all of the density from up the hill has been allocated to the parking lot.
And Deb, I mean, do you feel like that we're headed on the right track here, the commission?
I actually believe that on the building heights, there hasn't been as much pushback as I would have liked to have heard. Specifically last night, it was asked if the 103 and 87, 84, those building heights were what were in the 98 plan. And the answer was yes, and that's not true. In the 98 plan, they were 78, 75, 60, and 83. And that's an additional table that was included in the staff packet, but not in that portion. So I feel like that was a misrepresentation. So I have concerns on the building height. As far as the parking, I think that the commissioners seem to be really digging into that and asking tough questions, and they expect a lot more from it. So I'm pleased with that. The other thing, though, that is concerning is it requires, our LMC also requires that they can make certain findings of fact. And if in the end of the meeting last night, this really got talked about a lot. One of the findings, I think it's number 128 or whatever, it doesn't really matter, but it states that the concept master plan is compatible in use, scale, and mass with adjacent properties within the resort center neighborhood, promotes neighborhood compatibility, and protects surrounding residential neighborhoods and uses. And at least three of the commissioners said that they had a problem with that language, specifically compatibility, whatever. It was interesting to me that Robert McConnell, who is the lawyer attorney representing PEG, actually pointed out to them, well, based on your land management code, you have to be comfortable with that language. It cannot be altered to make you feel better about it. So we need your agreement on it. So I think that it's actually works in our favor for what we're trying to express and make the community aware that this project is not necessarily compatible with the adjacent neighborhoods, and it isn't necessarily protecting the surrounding neighborhoods.
Yeah. Do you have any other issues then with the findings of fact?
Well, we tried to just pick out a few. So I wanted to also state no loss of community amenities. And as the plan is currently right now, there is a potential for either reduction, loss, or rerouting for bus stops that are currently on Empire that service a lot of the condos along Empire, including employee housing for Deer Valley, and also for the Three Kings area, because the buses, when they make the turnaround at the transit center to head back out of the resort center, will not be allowed to make a left turn onto Silver King and then go through the Three Kings, Thanes, Payday neighborhoods. So consequently, they will be forced to go back out to the Park Avenue, Empire 224 intersection for routing.
Just to kind of wrap things up here, I mean, what's the latest timeline? It sounds like you still need to see the conclusions of this. I mean, we've gone through the findings, but still need to come back at least for one more meeting for that.
At least one more meeting, yes. Well, the commissioners in the planning department, I believe, left the meeting last night feeling that they had some work to do over the next month to kind of fine-tune those findings of facts. And so that puts us into September to review those. And if everything goes well there, I think we have one more meeting after that where the community can speak up. So we're probably looking towards the end of the year. Would you agree with that, Deb?
Or? Yes, I would agree. And also, it was pointed out numerous times that we were missing two of the commissioners that have actually been very outspoken and questioning the applicant on a lot of their exhibits and illustrations, and they weren't available last night. So I think for them to come back next month and have an opportunity to weigh in again on these findings of fact, I think they're going to have to be reviewed once more. And then, as Nancy said, they're going to have to edit and rewrite and bring that forth again in October. And at that point, maybe they would be ready for a vote in November. But I do believe that we're 2 to 3 months out.
Mm-hmm. All right. And just to find out, what are your personal interests in this? I mean, do you live next to, do you own a condo there? I mean,
Yes, we are. I live on Empire. So I feel like I've been one of the louder voices, as I should be, because it affects us the most. But my biggest concern at this point is the building heights. They are enormous. They are out of scale. I feel very strongly that one of the most beautiful things about Park City is its historic ambiance and the mining town feel of Old Town and the 2- and 3-story buildings. So to be putting 8-, 9-, 10-story buildings in the middle of Old Town just seems egregiously out of scale for Park City and Old Town. And I'm afraid that we're going to lose our historic ambiance. And if we lose it, there's no going back. You don't take down these buildings. So I'm very concerned that we are making some important decisions here for decades to come and generations to come.
Yeah, and Deb?
Yes, I also live on Empire, and I am concerned about the building heights, but I'm also very concerned about the site circulation, the additional parking that's going to be at the furthest point from the entry. They have shown that it's going to significantly increase the amount of traffic on Empire and potentially going either south of the resort on Empire and up on Lowell because of the way it's everything kind of dead ends there. And as AECOM presented, and I can tell you 100%, getting in and out of your driveway at certain times of the day during the ski season and even during the summer now, Leslie, I mean, there has been such an uptick in tourism and activity at the mountain. Like, you really have to be so careful backing out, and sometimes you have to wait an extended amount of time. And the way this is set up, it's only going to get worse. It is not going to improve.
Okay, Deb Redfro, Nancy Lasby, thanks so much for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you, Leslie.
Woodward Park City is a proud supporter of KPCW. Woodward Park City is an action sports community club dedicated to the Park City community.
On the phone with me, Katie Wang, Executive Director of Park City Film. Good morning, Katie.
Good morning, Leslie.
So let's see, we've got couple of more Twilight drive-ins happening?
Yes, yeah, we're looking forward to blue skies and sunny weather to return. We're loving the rain, of course, but summer will be back. Just wait a couple minutes. And we have 2 great film screenings this weekend at the Twilight drive-in at the Utah Olympic Park. We unfortunately had to cancel a couple of screenings last weekend, but we're back in action. It's been a tough week for many members of our community, myself included, with the evacuations caused by the Parley's Canyon fire. So this is a great opportunity to come together to celebrate and laugh and enjoy each other's company. And we have Dream Horse scheduled for Friday night. This is a 2020 Sundance Film Festival selection about a working class community in Wales that came together to raise and train a racehorse that went on to compete in the Welsh Grand National. It's based on a true story. The documentary Dark Horse came to Sundance a few years prior to Dream Horse premiering. And it's sort of a Chariots of Fire meets, with horses. That'll have you cheering from your seat. So great film all around there. And then Saturday night's selection is The Princess Bride, which perhaps needs no introduction, but this is the beloved story of Buttercup and her one true love, Wesley, that must battle inconceivable odds to be together. And as a special thank you for all of our first responders for keeping our community safe, and Summit County's teachers for the incredible work that they did last year and are certainly about to do this year as they reopen for another school year. We're making available free tickets to both films this weekend to Summit County first responders and teachers. That spans the county, not just Park City School Districts. And thanks to grant support that we've received from Park City Municipal and the Summit County Wrap Tax. So if that is you, if you meet that description, please use the code PCHERO, all caps, at checkout, and bring your ID with you to verify your employment at the box office. So big thanks to all of them for all the great work that they're doing. And then just a reminder to all of our ticket holders that you're eligible to win gift cards to local restaurants at every film that we show at the Twilight Drive-In, just as a way to get people back into our restaurants and help support our local economy. We've got some other great films programmed as well up there. We'll have Roald Dahl's classic Fantastic Mr. Fox coming up on Saturday, August 28th, which is a hilarious story venture directed by Wes Anderson. The Academy Award winning Soul and Lin-Manuel Miranda's In the Heights on September 16th. And then a ski film weekend planned for September 23rd through 25th with Matchstick Productions' newest ski film, Buried, which is a doc about the Alpine Meadows avalanche, and more to be announced. So lots coming up over at the Utah Olympic Park, and we hope people will join us. It's been really fun to see people out at the drive-in this summer again.
Yeah, how long are you going to stay outside?
Well, that's a good question, Leslie. We are programmed out now through the end of September. We will be reopening at the Santee on September 10th. So we're looking forward to in-theater screenings as well. But, you know, there may be interest in keeping the Twilight Drive-In open longer into the fall. We're just keeping an eye on how things are going with COVID cases and seeing what the response is to the drive-in. So we may do both simultaneously in theater screenings and the Twilight Drive-In. So there certainly is a little bit of overlap in September already. But yeah, we're just keeping an eye on it. So to be announced for that, but definitely through the end of September for now. So
okay, you got the staff then
to come on out and enjoy it.
You got the staff to staff both facilities, huh?
Well, we've had a great response and support from the Park City Ski and Snowboard team. They have provided their athletes to volunteer for parking the lot over at the Utah Olympic Park. And with our COVID protocols in place at the Santee, we'll be operating essentially the same as we were in the spring. So very limited capacity. We'll be bumping up to about 50% from 14% last spring. You know, that kind of limits how many people can be in each space. So yeah, I think we'll have a good way to manage that. And you know, our community has been really supportive of our volunteers in particular helping us out with these events. So yeah, no, I think we can do both well, and you know, if that's what the community wants us to do and is responsive to it, that's kind of what we're talking about anyway at this point.
Okay. And again, you mentioned you're going to be back in the Santee the weekend of September 10th.
Yes, so we normally return every year after, usually we take a break in the summer, but not the last couple summers. We'll return the weekend after Labor Day, so September 10th, and we're coming back with Summer of Soul, or When the Revolution Could Not Be Televised. This is a compliment to the Park City Song Summit, which will be happening that weekend, so a compliment their programming around music that weekend, and also just a showcase of one of the hits of the 2021 Sundance Film Festival. It's just a film that just demands to be seen on the big screen, in a theater, just immersed in the incredible sound and story of the 1969 Harlem Cultural Festival. This is an event that included Stevie Wonder, Mavis Staples, Sly and the Family Stone. I mean, just, you know, all the best and brightest stars of that era. This is an event that happened at the same time as Woodstock, but really was relatively unknown outside of the community that went to see it. So Amir Questlove Thompson was able to find this footage and brought it to life, and it's a celebration of Black history and culture, fashion and music. It won the Audience Award, the Director's Award, and the Grand Jury Prize at Sundance this year. So just a fantastic, just celebratory film. So we really wanted to use that to kick off our season. As I mentioned earlier, we'll have all of our COVID protocols in place at the Santee. Masks will be mandatory for all patrons at all times, except when they're actively eating or drinking in their seats. Reduced capacity to 50%, which is about 200 seats. So you can have that 6-foot buffer around you, enhanced ventilation and cleaning. And then all of our volunteers and staff are going to be vaccinated against COVID-19. So as an extra layer of precaution there. Other films looking forward include Roadrunner, which is a film about Anthony Bourdain, 9 Days, another Sundance Film Festival hit, The Green Knight. And then we're also going to continue our virtual cinema because we know some folks are still not comfortable being inside in the theater. Maybe the drive-ins not their thing either, but this gives us kind of a second screen to engage our audience around the art of film. We've got a great documentary of Barbara Lee, the representative from Oakland, coming up this weekend. So parkcityfilm.org for all of that information, but lots of films in our future for sure.
Okay, just have a second here left, but again, you're going to keep the earlier start at 7 p.m. on Friday and Saturday instead of 8?
Actually, so yes, at the Jim Santee, I should mention, sorry, the drive-in films this weekend are at 8:30, both films on the weekend. And then we're at the Santee, yep, we'll be Friday, Saturday at 7, and then Sunday at 6. So we'll keep with that earlier showtime. People really responded well. Just want to give a quick shout out to our sponsors because I know we're wrapping up here. But Julie Hopkins, Keller Williams Real Estate, Summit County Wrap and Restaurant Tax, Utah Division of Arts and Museums, and our Twilight Drive-In sponsors, Switchback Sports and Made in PC, and of course, all of our members. It's been a tremendous amount of support this year. Thank you for that, and thanks for coming out to the movies. ParkCityFilm.org.
Thanks, Katie. Katie Wang, Executive Director of Park City Film. Once again, the Park City Council meeting this afternoon for its first meeting since July 15th. Council meeting beginning at 4 o'clock in work session. Council members will discuss landscape bonds, the creation of a public improvement district known as a PID, as well as a follow-up discussion on the controversial soil site known as the Gordo Project. The project there is an effort to store mining waste from Park City's days as a mining town safely and economically within the city limits. The soil contains chemicals like lead and arsenic and is found throughout much of Old Town, Prospector, and downstream from there. Mining waste excavated is currently transported to the West Desert. The city estimates $17 million could be saved over the next 10 years if that soil is stored inside the city. The city held a city council held a lengthy public hearing in July. Not one person's in support of the project in its current form. While there is no staff recommendation to move forward with the existing plan today, City Manager Matt Dias thinks that the council will decide to explore some other options.